Whenever we're activated in those older ways of being, or whenever the trauma is coming to the surface, or we're falling into those patterns of dysregulation, consciousness and learning how to ground ourselves in the present moment is, in my opinion, one of the most integral tools.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. Welcome back. So we are wrapping on week one of the Magnetism Challenge this Sunday. It's been such an awesome week. Let me actually preface this for anybody who doesn't know what we're up to. Every single year we do usually a reprogramming challenge. This year, because it's been such a challenging year and triggering year, we actually decided to do an entire magnetism challenge. And so what that means is we're going all together in community through how to manifest all of the videos of the new, totally updated, the daily practice. And then we move into 3 weeks of unblocking. And the whole point of that is we're doing every single thing we need to do in order to create the magnetism we need to connect with our manifestation in 2021. Not only that, but we're also creating the perfect allotted amount of time to create a new habit. So to really get a practice going. So what that means is we have to unblock, expand, pass tests to connect with our manifestation. As a group, we're going through all the nitty gritty. And that's how this week has been. It's been so fun engaging with all of you on Instagram. If you're not watching the stories there daily at To Be Magnetic, you're going to want to, because I'm just giving so much extra teachings in those videos. So it was really fun because we kicked off day one. We all signed these commitment sheets and what we're looking to do during this challenge, our intention. And then we also all found our authentic codes. We shared them because going through the new updated How to Manifest, you find your authentic code. And the really fun day that was so awesome to watch, and we reshared a ton of these on Instagram as well as in the Pathway Community group, is we made this template to share your list, because sharing your actual, like a picture of your journal list, can be very vulnerable. So this was a nice way to share bullet points. And it was awesome because I walked through and showed all of these extra teachings of everybody's list, using them as examples of different aspects of what you can and can't do on your list, and how to open up more freedom, how to call in bridge jobs. It was just so great. And the beautiful thing is when we see in community, may it be you're in the community group or you're following on Instagram at To Be Magnetic, seeing other people's authentic code takes all of the question out of how do I get down to those root words of mine? Because that can be really challenging for people. And the authentic code, for anybody who doesn't know, it's the four pillars of our authenticity that we filter everything through. So we teach you in that you have to delegate and detox anything that's not your authentic code. It makes life so simple of how to make choices, how to take on new opportunities, dating experiences, everything, when you know your authentic code. So seeing other people's has been so helpful to really go, oh, that could be a baseline word for mine, what I'm coming up with as well. And also seeing other people's lists, we have tons of people who will come and they'll be like, I don't know what I want to call in, which is fine. And then seeing other people's, it really helps you start to jog your memory of like, oh, this might be the micro manifestation I want to call in, even though I don't know the big thing yet. These are the little things. The other thing that was really cool to see too is a lot of people are like, what if I'm a non-specific manifester? We've actually found in this community that getting down to the specifics, the core essence of why you're calling in, what you're calling in, as well as how it feels, specific lists actually end up working out really well for everybody. So you can drop all of that human design, non-specific or specific. Lila, who used to work with us, was a great example. In fact, the more specific she got with the why and what it feels like, the more she called in what she wanted. So that was really cool to teach people. And now we're moving into all of the daily practice videos, so you can catch those. Biggest question we got, if I haven't started the challenge yet, can I? Yes, you can hop on anytime. The beautiful thing about it, it's so well constructed that the moment you start, you just continue it through that time in January. It's perfect. And you can catch up. You can do most of it in a day if you want, or 2 days or 3 days and catch up to where we are. It's all about your own personal pace and then connecting with your community inside of the community group and asking questions and supporting each other. And the biggest thing I want to say is the moment we consciously or unconsciously begin calling something in, it's already orbiting around us. So inside of this challenge, you're going to be consciously calling in what you want. And then the universe always starts to send you mirrors of where you still have low self-worth, subconscious blocks that are pushing away your manifestation. And that's exactly precisely what we're doing through this. We are spotting tests, we're doing all of the unblocking necessary, and we're finding expanders and learning how to do it all together or revisiting together. I've done How to Manifest a gazillion times, and I'm still learning new aspects of my own process. So come and hop on anytime. The other question we always get is, do you have to be a Pathway member to do this? You do. But the beautiful thing is, many people continue to ask us after our Black Friday sale, can you please keep this deal going? And honestly, from our hearts to yours, we want everybody to have access to this challenge. It is profound, the results that you will see at the end of it. So we've continued the deal. You can use the code MAGNETIC20 to sign up for the pathway at the rate of $20 a month. It's usually $27 a month, but this will be a $7 monthly savings, which turns out to be 12 months of payments that add up to $240 a year, which I will tell you, $240 a year is less than we used to charge selling just How to Manifest a la carte. So we're really making this as accessible as possible because you're getting all access to every single one of our workshops, which totals over $1,000 for a year. So it's really accessible. So use the code MAGNETIC, all caps, MAGNETIC20. If you're new and you don't have a Pathway membership, come hop on with us and can't wait to see you in there. Now we'll be moving into week two. This is where we start the reprogramming process. This is where we start to really look at all of those mirrors that the universe has begun to show us now that we've called in consciously what we want, or if we've been unconsciously calling in what we want. And we're going to take those and we're going to work through the new daily practice, the actual deep imaginings, to start unblocking them and start recognizing our tests and working through them and start finding expanders. Those are all things you can do within the daily practice. And this week's filtration is going to be based on what triggers are coming up. So it's going to be perfect to keep a journal of how you're triggered from very small or activated very largely in a day, and they can be positive. What I mean by that is somebody can give you a compliment that's very hard to receive. Maybe you blush or you can't take it or you deflect. That's something to look at. There's so many different ways that we're triggered from positive to negative. It's amazing. You're going to be able to use that filtration to pull up. Is it that you're needing confidence? Or is it that, you know, somebody made you angry, or that you're feeling a lot of emotions coming up around the holidays? And we kick it all off on Monday together. So I'll see you in there, and let's get into today's episode. Today's episode is definitely going to become a favorite very quickly. She's a favorite guest. You all have enjoyed her that we've had in the past. She's known as the holistic psychologist on Instagram with over 3 million followers, Dr. Nicole LaPira. She's a trained clinical psychologist from Cornell University. She's the creator of the Self-Healer Circle and the author of the new book that you're going to hear a lot about in this episode called How to Do the Work, Recognize Your Patterns, Heal from Your Past, and Create Yourself. Sound familiar with our work? I'm beyond excited to have Dr. Nicole back on the podcast, as she's one of our most popular episodes. And we really focus a lot today on boundaries. So I know there's so much you're going to take away from this episode, especially because it's a month that we can really rub up against our triggers and boundaries. Let's hear it. Well, welcome back. We are so excited to have you. All have done a marvelous intro before this, but just to kick off, how have you been lately? How are you faring this year?
Thank you first, Lacey, for having me back on. I was super excited knowing I was going to get to connect with you again and your audience. This year, it's been wild. You probably heard me saying similar maybe last time we spoke. I feel like the last 2 years have been a whirlwind, though. 2020 and all that is definitely been here in many ways. So I'm faring. I'm, you know, walking through all of it. I'm actually getting increasingly more excited because we're nearing the release of my first book. So that's becoming real, which is super, super exciting for me as a, I think, a point of contrast to some of the other stuff I think that's been alive for many of us over the past year. So my bright light has been the book project that I've been going back to time and time again when things have gotten challenging.
Well, I'm so excited. I definitely have been keeping up and I can't wait to read it. It's so seemingly in alignment with everything that we believe in and teach. I'm assuming, though I haven't gotten to read it, but just based on the title and what I have seen, the snippets. So we'll definitely be getting into that. What have you seen in terms of 2020 as a whole? And we all know that it's affecting us in very different ways. But collectively, what are the biggest tools you think that have been beneficial this year for your community or anybody you've spoken to that can just sort of be an ending note to tie up this experience of 2020?
Yeah, I think there are incredibly important tools. One of the many ways, but one of the predominant ways it's affected us is it's really, for many of us, activated deeper wounding, deeper trauma patterning that many of us have been carrying with us for a lifelong. And so what I mean when I say that is, in the most simplistic way, you know, 2020 is the language I use. It's the ultimate pattern interrupt.
Yep.
From life just looks different, doesn't look the same. I don't get up and do the same, you know, travel commute to work where I'm sitting in the same office with the same people. So at minimum, that's change challenges a part of our brain, the subconscious, that doesn't like change. So as humans, when life looks different, it can be challenging and it can activate us. That pattern interrupt is why I think for a lot of us outside of 2020, transitions are hard. You know, when life looked one way for many years and now it doesn't, maybe because I've evolved out of school or maybe out of that relationship, that newness is challenging to our systems. And that's at the most minimum level, Lacey, because then obviously this gets compounded by the very real wounding and trauma patterns that many of us are operating in addition to the very real repercussions of 2020, where some of us are losing income, jobs, relationships, and or we're stuck at home, you know, in relationships that are problematic. And the reason why I'm describing, you know, the way I conceptualize 2020 and all of the varied fallouts or consequences it's having for us is because whenever we're activated in those older ways of being, or whenever the trauma is coming to the surface, or we're falling into those patterns of dysregulation, consciousness and learning how to ground ourselves in the present moment, you know, possibly in the safety in our bodies through the power of our breath, is, in my opinion, one of the most integral tools. So how and when and where, right? And that this all is different for each of us. Can I find that safety and the necessity of doing so, right? Through a conscious practice of possibly grounding myself in the moment, maybe using my breath to regulate, you know, those moments of nervous system activation, and or learning how to consciously navigate maybe the more difficult relationship patterns that we're stuck in now at home with that human, et cetera. So consciousness and nervous system regulation, I think, are the key tools that most of us humans are going to need to continue to navigate life as we know it.
Absolutely. And that's so interesting because my next question was going to be self-regulate. We hear this term a lot. I think you just actually really clearly gave some great examples of what that can be and how it's so connected to your nervous system, which is so connected to your subconscious, which isn't a recent, Instagram post that I saw of yours. So I totally concur. I think that is the most important grounding and finding what works for you to self-regulate. So I love that.
Just to piggyback off of that, a lot of us struggle with self-regulation. So when we're challenged, that's when those older coping mechanisms, those older attempts at regulating, because I just like to be clear, we all have that. We all have the old way that we attempt it to regulate. So it's really honing that in a much more conscious way, in a much more impactful way. I think that's the issue that's happening for a lot of us. We're attempting to regulate ourselves, though maybe we're doing so with those older coping tools that aren't necessarily benefiting us. Maybe we're relying on substances or, we're doing the things that aren't necessarily truly helping to regulate ourselves.
Or if it's my case, it's Instagram, relying on my partner to complete me. Like there's so many layers.
Oh, there's so many. Yes, absolutely. The codependency, the feeling, in very many ways, a lot of us are maybe reliant on people outside of ourselves now. So those old patterns can come back in where we become overly reliant and don't necessarily regain the tools of self-regulation. So it's about honing how we self-regulate. And I'll be the first person to say, I had no idea how to self-regulate myself, even as a clinical psychologist who was seemingly taught how. So I think, like I said, it's been very challenging in that direction because a lot of us, I think, are still learning how to self-regulate.
You mentioned partnership as I did as well. Remind me, you were partnered when I saw you last time. Are you married or you guys are strictly partners?
We are married. We have been married, for several years. I refer to her as my partner, as opposed to my wife, which is likely why we're upwards around 5 years. We don't really commemorate our anniversary. So we are married, though. We have the paper.
I love it. And I want to dig into that a little bit. This is a total personal dig for me because I'm at that juncture where marriage was never that important to me with my partner, any partners I've had, and it's always been something where it's like, very Aquarian, very independent. And it's funny with this pregnancy, it must be a hormonal thing, but just recently I've been like, I'm ready to get married. So I've been looking, I'm like, before was that avoidant? Where was that really coming from? But yeah, just talking about that a little bit and the concept of partnership right now. I know loneliness can be a big thing that's coming up for many people or FOMO. Yeah. So just kind of opening up that conversation a bit.
Yeah. And, I think relationships are so interesting because they're so, we define relationships in so many different ways. We define marriage in so many different ways. A lot of it is influenced, by what we were taught at very early ages, whether or not it's within our family of origin or, the societies and systems that expand out to the macro. And a lot of us, as we do in many areas, we internalize these beliefs about what a relationship is, what a healthy versus unhealthy, even though I don't love using those, adjectives, or what marriage is or isn't, or when it's appropriate and not. And we accumulate all of these beliefs. And I'm resonating with your, lived experience of it. Marriage for me, even though my parents have been married for Jesus, I want to say like 54 years now, wow. They're up maybe upwards of 55 years. Yeah, they had me later in life. My mom was 42 and my dad was 45. So they're upwards in their 80s now and still married. So of course I saw a version of marriage, though I never really felt compelled to get married of my own accord. So interestingly though, I was married once previously and you'll read a lot about this in the book. And the way I understand that, is I didn't really subscribe to an idea of marriage that I thought I was intending on at that time, very much in my codependency patterning, it's the direction we were moving in. So it was the logical next step. So as much as I say, I don't really believe in marriage, here I am someone twice married, though for me, it's like, what does marriage mean? And for me, it doesn't necessarily carry some of the meanings that it does for some people. So again, a lot of us can find ourselves challenged because marriage and relationships are definitely one of those areas, I believe, where we have had ideas passed down. And we are possibly, well, this is the exploration, I guess, that I would urge us all to engage in within ourselves is identifying what are the narratives I tell myself, right, around relationships, around marriage, maybe in particular. And more importantly, the next part of the question, how do they resonate now? Was that something that maybe was important, you know, in my family of origin, or maybe in the religion that I used to practice, or maybe for my old self who didn't have the tools that I have now? So, you know, identifying what is our narrative around possibly relationships, marriage, and then opening up our door to explore what it means for us. And I have given a lot of thought, and I'm actually reading a book about unpacking relationships, and was actually,
I
love it. I love that you asked me this, Lacey, because it was talking about relationships, you know, and narratives and models of, I think, more traditional ideas of relationship. And I'm really simplifying this. The book obviously goes into greater depth, but essentially like this idea of relationships complete me, right? Meet my need outside and or are permanent, you know, and long-term. If I've signed up to the relationship, you know, I stay in it for life, versus a more spiritually grounded model of relationships, which acknowledges that relationships come in all different shapes and sizes. There's not a one-size-fits-all model for relationships. There's not a one-size-fits-all longevity or trajectory for relationships, though it acknowledges that there's a function of relationships in our life, that relationships, if you believe in the soul or the spiritual essence of being, relationships help us to grow or to evolve, which allows us to then have a much more expanded version. So that's something I think a lot about, because I do, you know, teach on this more side of the spiritual aspects and the essence of us. I obviously think a lot about that kind of spiritual aspect of relationships. So what that means in my life, right, is acknowledging that I have different types of needs that I bring to different relationship tables, right? I have the person who I know thinks emotionally exactly the way I do. So when I go to that person, they're going to get exactly what I mean, versus I have the person who challenges me, who thinks differently about a situation. And in those moments of challenge, growth can happen. And then I have everything in between.
And that's exactly how I view relationships in our lives. To me, they're mirrors. They're the perfect opportunity to grow and just really evolve into our true authentic selves. So what is the title of that book?
This book that I'm reading is called The Seat of the Soul by Gary Zukav.
Yes, yes, yes. I have never read it, but familiar with that.
I hadn't read it yet either. So I was excited to dive in. We're going to have it in the book club for next month. So I'm super excited about it.
It's an Oprah favorite.
Yes.
I'm actually selfishly going to get into one other tangent, and then we'll get into a couple of different concepts on boundaries. But as I'm going to be a parent, you know, I'm really starting to pluck the knowledge of my community beyond the work that I do. For you, what would be the most important aspects to be looking at to prepare for conscious parenting? You know, if you were in this position or when you were working with clients, if I wanted to really kind of examine or look at something specifically or work towards something specifically, what direction would you point me in?
So you're probably not going to be surprised by the way I initiate my answer into this question. And I feel like it's definitely in alignment. I get questions a lot asked, you know, directly by parents. How do I, you know, consciously parent? What do I do when my child X, Y, or Z? And my answer is always some version of turning the focus back on self, right? Meaning conscious parenting begins with a conscious human who's able to identify and meet their needs in their right physical, emotional, and spiritual selves, for their spiritual, emotional selves. So that is always going to be the basis of an answer. So I think what's so important, you know, in terms of conscious parenting is to, you know, explore the ways that we show up for ourselves in all of the areas, explore what we're modeling for our children. Because while the old adage, right, do what I say, not as I do, exists, it's not very true. What's most impactful for our children is what they're seeing modeled to them. There's a neurological reason for that, and it's in these very beautiful little cells that we have on our brain that are called mirror neurons that quite literally fire as you're watching someone engage. So in a way, our parents' way of being around us, you know, how they're caring for their physical bodies and we're observing them, whether or not we're even aware we're watching or not, we're taking it in like a sponge, right? We're in relationship, emotional exchanges with these humans. We're watching, we're absorbing, and we're firing when our parents, when we see our parents acting or inacting in certain ways. And so that becomes a mental rehearsal, making it ever more likely for us to engage in those same patterns. So when we think about how do we set ourselves up to successfully, consciously parent our children, it is really a conversation about how conscious are we to our own selves, you know, and all of the conditioned ways that we've attempted to meet our needs in those three areas? And how can we be as self-sufficient, as attuned to ourselves, so that we can then transfer, whether or not it's just the space, the emotional space, right? Where I don't have children, so I can't imagine what it must be like. But there's many moments in the day where we're a human as a parent having emotions and our child needs us, right? So how do I learn how to meet my need or contain my need over here so I can show up to be present to my child? And that begins with the self. And it begins, like I said, with how aware are we of our own patterning and how consciously can we show up differently so that we can be attuned to our child who's a unique individual in themselves.
Love it. And I full agreement. For a real practical example, you know, because I'm sure a lot of parents or parents to be are listening. Let's say, you know, a parent does something that they regret. Wasn't the most conscious act in the moment. They lost their cool, whatever it could be. It certainly wasn't the direction they wanted to go in conscious parenting, and they're spread thin. What is the healthiest way? Because I grew up in, we talked about this in the last episode, but deep enmeshment, codependency, all of that beautiful stuff, alcoholic parent, for a course correction. Sort of through my research, it looks like, and what I've sort of studied myself is being able to show emotion properly, being able to apologize. So kind of getting back to, I guess, secure. If I want to get into attachment styles, like what is the best way to go about, in a nutshell, trying to remain insecure or healing avoidance or attachment and instilling that into our children?
First, I want to answer this by acknowledging that we all have those one-offs, right? What I'm talking about is the consistent. Not having the parent that one bad day, you know, react it maybe in a way that they didn't consciously want to. Though what, how I'm going to answer does apply to those situations, the what to do next. Though I do want to be clear, this isn't the one-off occasion. This is when that becomes the predominant patterning. The mother or father, whoever the caregiver is, who's constantly distracted and unavailable. So that's an important thing to consider, though the answer is still going to be somewhat the same, which is to acknowledge it. To give the child, you know, to if you had had that moment of, you know, reactivity and, you know, it wasn't, you know, related, it was triggered, if you will, activated by what the child did, though maybe it wasn't necessarily related to the child at all. It could have been you have no resources left. You did have a stressful day at work. And, you know, when the child did the thing, you reacted like that. It could also be more complicated. It could be something was activated from your own childhood in that moment. Regardless, it's not necessarily about your child. And the reason why I'm a proponent of speaking this, of acknowledging it, hey, little child, you know mommy yelled right now. And I want to acknowledge that, you know, it wasn't about you, mommy, you know, whatever you want to say. Children can understand way more than we give them credit for. And the reason why this is important is because your child's going to create a story about what happened. And if they're in the critical stage of birth through, say, age 7 or 8, the only story that their mind will allow them to create because of the developmental stage they're in is a narrative that assigns blame to themselves. They were yelled at, just using this very simple example, right? They were yelled at because they were bad in that moment. And then again, the more consistently that happens, the more obviously internalized shame, you know, we could have and carry into adulthood. So the moment of the mother, you know, or the caregiver, whomever it was, I was using myself as the mother example, approaching that child and acknowledging that it wasn't the child, that it was, you know, their own stress level and or whatever it was, that could give that child an alternate narrative. So in my opinion, that goes an incredibly long way. That open level of communication, that acknowledgement, and that very conscious working through in creating that security. Because what security comes from is authenticity, is knowing, right, that the person that is showing up for you is fully present and is more or less there, you know, to help support you. And it gets really confusing, like I said, because us as children, we are exploring the world. We are experiencing the world right alongside of our parents. And many of us, we don't have the attuned person to help us make sense of it.
And what could an overcorrection look like? A codependent imprintation?
this happens a lot, and this happens very well intentionally. You know, if we have had negative things happen in our childhood or distressing things happen in our childhood, a lot of us very consciously even make the decision, I will never let this happen to my kids, some version of that. And then what we can do is we tend to maybe overcorrect, right? So if you came from my household, you know, a mother who was, you know, emotionally withdrawn, and, you know, in many ways, I see this patterning a little bit, you know, in an older version of my sister, who coming from the same codependent unit, overcorrected, at least initially, with her son, right? So for her, and what that looks like is, oh, well, now I'm going to be emotionally overpresent to my kid, right? I'm almost going to be emotionally boundaryless with my child. And so that can be a version of a very well-intentioned overcorrection. I don't want my child to feel emotionally alone like I did. So I'm going to make them feel emotionally, you know, merged. And either end of the extreme, in my opinion, you know, creates, again, negative patterning that doesn't fully serve us.
And that's a great segue into boundaries, the really fun topic. I know we covered it quite a bit in our last episode, but it's something we've been, you know, sort of focused on over here. We've just put out a new workshop, energetic, based around manifestation. And one thing you said in the last episode, which I loved, was the word we all love to hate, boundaries, which is true. You know, it's a tough one, especially from the subject matter we were just talking about, coming from any type of codependency units or enmeshment. It's a really tough cookie. So this is something I'm imagining that's really coming up for a lot of people this time of year, even if we are, you know, in our singular pods or we're alone. I can imagine that for myself, this is the case. And for many others, the holidays bring up boundary setting, the need to set boundaries. Why is it so vital in creating healthy relationships? Boundaries.
Boundaries are difficult, quite universally, because a lot of us come from either that codependent conditioning, which means we're outsourcing our needs, right? We're relying on something outside of ourselves to meet our needs. So that's all we know. And I also believe, and this is going to apply to the answer, it's difficult because of some messaging we get. And a lot of times boundaries, and I even see my work misinterpreted in this way, a lot of us take boundaries to mean hyper-independence, right? This idea of I'm on my island alone. My opinion, you know, is that healthy boundaries, the space that allows me to authentically meet my needs, actually allows me to show up toward those interdependent relationships that we thrive on as humans, though to do so authentically, not from that need-based externalization state. So I just like to segue in with that, because I think boundaries are misunderstood and definitely can be misunderstood by the people around us, especially on the holidays, right, when we begin to implement them. And for a lot of us, boundaries on the holidays, you know, might look like space and plans and, you know, where am I spending holidays? I know some of it's compromised, of course, now. A lot of times it's around emotions and what holidays mean and how, you know, emotions come up in terms of holidays. So boundaries are particularly activated and challenging in our families of origin, which obviously is the predominant conversation for most of us around the holidays. We're looking toward that one trip home a year, right? So this is, I think, why, you know, our relationship and our relationship patterns and the topic of boundaries comes up. And like I said earlier, it becomes even more challenging for those of us that are used to meeting everyone else's needs before our own, you know, as is the case for many of us operating in that codependent conditioning. And a little bit of that idea that the kind of universal shoulds, this idea of if you take care of yourself, I think self-care, you know, has a bad rap in a lot of ways. Again, it all leads us down to that misinterpretation of this hyper individualism. So just to clarify that meeting our own boundaries really allows us to show up for others and to be in service of others authentically and of the collective. So in terms of looking around at our holidays, you know, assessing what are the limits for many of us new that we want to put in place, whether or not it's with our time, our energy, maybe our emotional availability and resources. If you do have those relationships that emotionally depend on you to your own detriment in some way, knowing that holidays stir up a lot of emotions in us, it might be emotional boundaries that we want to put into place. So boundary creation involves three steps, as I'm sure we talked about. Identifying, so doing that self-assessment of where might boundaries benefit me this holiday season. then setting them, you know, if you come to decide that you do want to modify maybe the way holidays are celebrated or how available you are to the people that need you emotionally during this time. So you're going to want to set some new limits. And then the third step, which is often just as difficult as the setting of the boundary, is the keeping of the boundary. Because this is now where we, from the most minimum, we violate the other person's expectations. Well, wait a minute. You've always been here on New Year's Eve. Well, wait a minute. You've always, you know, answered when I call you at all hours. And this is a particularly hard time for me, Nicole. So why aren't you available now, right? To keeping that boundary up amidst the violation of expectation and also obviously the more challenging things. Those of us on the other end, the receiving end of a boundary who have abandonment wounds, might have all sorts of activation coming to the surface. So we want to identify where there could be helpful, set them, and then work to maintain them for ourselves.
And how important do you feel it is to address the wounding or trigger beneath that is making it hard for us to set a boundary or has kept us in the same patterning for so long before setting that boundary?
In terms of identifying the where or the why, for some of us, that's incredibly helpful. And for some of us, it's incredibly clear. Oh, I know where that, you know, difficulty or that patterning came. Awareness, you know, does help us create change. However, change happens in those moments where I have the option of that old reaction or the new choice that I want to make. So I have the option of answering that phone or showing up at, you know, Christmas Eve dinner, or I have the option of creating change. So it's both, I guess, you know, and so some of us who don't have the awareness of why it's difficult, if the question is, can I still create change? The answer is absolutely, right? By identifying the patterns that aren't working for me and finding the way to putting the limit in place that would help me feel safer, more secure, or more authentically me in that relationship. So change really is the process of acting on the awareness. I am someone who, because of a history of dissociation, I don't have super a lot of memories of pathways. More of my memories are in feelings, you know, oh, this, I imagine this was hard, you know, in my childhood because I see this patterning now, though I don't have the moment in time where this developed. Like I said, I carry the remnant of it with me in the way that I'm showing up. So for me, in the complete lack of boundaries in my life, I knew that boundaries were an issue. So that created the opportunity to put some new limits that would, like I said, create more space for me to be able to embody who I am authentically in more of my relationships.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode. How do you like to navigate healthily when somebody else's shadow presents upon you setting a boundary because whatever wound they have is being activated or the patterning is changing?
yeah, buried. And this happens quite often, like I said, from just we violated the expectation of the person to their shadow, their abandonment wound, their own childhood trauma, or their own narrative is coming to the surface. And, you know, this is an area where there's no universal answer, because depending on the relationship context, there are some moments where active negotiation is appropriate and even helpful. If it's possibly maybe with your core partner, acknowledging that maybe it's not in, we can have two types of boundaries, put it this way. We can have the non-negotiable boundaries, right? This is the amount of physical space I need to feel safe. This is my emotional boundary. These are different for each of us. So we can think about boundaries, and it might be helpful now that I'm speaking this out to do so in that way. Get us a set of, these are boundaries that I can't and won't change because without them, I don't feel safe in my body or in my relationships. And then we have the other boundaries that might be a little more negotiable. And the reason why I brought that up, it's not to say that we have to be super rigid all of the time across all relationships. Some boundary areas, especially when we do see, you know, the person on the receiving end struggling with their shadow, if this is, you know, a safe space of relational evolution, if it's your primary partner or someone that you're, you know, undergoing this journey with, the decision might be to negotiate, to find a middle that works for both. However, it's really helpful to acknowledge, you know, the wound that's coming up for the other person and to, you know, incorporate, I believe, that in the exchange as well. So we can acknowledge it, and it doesn't mean we have to be so rigid. Well, this is still my hard line, unless, of course, it's one of those non-negotiables. This might be an area, and I share this because my partner Lolly and I still have those moments. My older activation conditioning in one area and hers come up against each other. And ideally, we both want to see something in opposition happen in that moment. So in those moments, it's what is the middle that works for both of us? Of course, I'm speaking, you know, about her, a relationship that I consider, you know, my home base, my secure relationship. So I'm able to more comfortably navigate those negotiated middles. However, from a vantage point, as we often do when we're not emotionally activated, we can have those conversations where I say, you know what, that was my inner child coming out in that moment, and or she can do the same. So we acknowledge, right, the shadow or the wound that came to the surface, sometimes after the fact, not in the heat of the moment. And it can become a point of conversation. Though, like I said, I still build in the flexibility to find that middle that's workable for both of us.
And what if you're dealing with somebody that isn't in that conscious evolutionary space with you, which tends to be often, even if it's family?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, when it gets really much more challenging. And that's when I get the question of how do I make them understand, see, heal, get it, change, some version of that. And unfortunately, we have to acknowledge in those moments the limit of our power. We cannot change another human being. Right. So in those moments, it's acknowledging this is the way I can, you know, frame it, at least the level of consciousness of that person, acknowledging that ultimately we can wish someone to change, you know, though the action of changing, of showing up differently every day is on them. So for some of us, just knowing what's happening in those moments for that person allows us to reframe, you know, and change possibly the dynamics, change the needs we're bringing to that relationship, change essentially how we're showing up in absence of trying to change them. So again, the work always, in my opinion, reflects back to me. That doesn't mean that in some of those relationships, we might not put up some new boundaries, right? If that was a person who we were going to for everything, you know, we come to realize that they're just in a different place in terms of their healing journey. This might be a person that I might want to create a boundary with. I might start to, you know, not make them my primary.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you talk about four different types of boundaries: physical boundaries, emotional boundaries, resource boundaries, material boundaries. You've kind of touched on physical and emotional a little bit. Do you want to touch on resource and material?
Yeah. So resource boundaries, this kind of hangs under, the material hangs under that too. I mean, we've all different types of resources. We have everything from our stuff, you know, our space, our physical space that can often be violated by the roommate, you know, who leaves their stuff amongst our stuff, to using our stuff. A really common resource boundaries around our emotional resources. How emotionally available am I to the people in my life? And that looks like, you know, having the people who are ever reliant on us to help them through their emotions. Again, this is consistently all of the time with very little space for ourselves and our emotions. And the reality of it is, Lacey, we have an emotional limit, you know, and we need to replenish ourselves emotionally first before we can show up to be fully present with someone else. So what emotional resources look like and boundaries around that is really acknowledging, you know, how emotionally balanced am I am right now? How present can I be to someone else? If someone else shares something, you know, with me that can emotionally activate something inside of me, can I handle that? Can I contain that? Or will that cause a situation of reactivity or of disconnect? And a lot of us are continuing to show up in all of our relationships without having our emotional needs tended to, and therefore not having emotional resources to give to others. The unfortunate consequence of this is before long, we begin to become incredibly resentful of others. We begin to, you know, curse Janet because she calls me at all hours of the night needing me for something, instead of saying, well, wait a minute, Nicole, you know, I picked up the phone. I didn't have the resources at 3 a.m. I don't know about you. I'm quite tired at 3 a.m. I don't have resources for anyone at that hour. So that's a silly example. But that, I think, is the really predominant resource type boundary that a lot of us, especially in the codependent framework, struggle with. We're not replenishing our own emotional resources. So we're not setting ourselves up to show up more fully and presently to support someone else in their emotional experiences.
This is where I've had to boundary up the most. I've gotten really comfortable with it, but it was very hard. And then I know you gave a formula, you know, earlier with the awareness and kind of how to work through the boundary. What does a really healthy boundary setting experience look like for you, just in general? What does that look like as an example for someone who's like, cool, we've been hearing all about boundaries, but like, give me a real life example.
So what can be really helpful once we've, you know, identified and come to the conclusion of the boundary we want to set, having a conversation is incredibly, can be a helpful step. Communicating to the other the change that you intend to happen. Really helpful tips of when and how to make this, why, let me first start, why it's helpful to communicate that you can now present, you know, lay forward what the new plan of action is for that other human, so that when you do initiate, when you do set that new boundary, they at least have your version of the narrative of why it's happening. They might still have their own narrative of abandonment, of you don't love them, of you're selfish, right? That comes to the surface. Though, right, just like that little child, you're giving them a scenario. You're telling them what it actually is, should they choose to accept it or not. So communication can go a really long way. It is not helpful to have the communication in the middle of an argument, in the middle of having your boundary crossed when you're emotionally activated. This type of communication is best relayed when both parties are emotionally calm as possible. Now, I say both because we could practice the most perfect delivery, and I'm going to give a couple tips about that in a second, but we could practice the most perfect delivery of our new statement around our boundary. And if that person on the other end is emotionally activated and isn't hearing it, it's going to lay on deaf ears. So that's why I say making sure both parties can be somewhat receptive, and receptivity increases when we're not emotionally activated, when we're not in our emotional brain, which for most of us houses all of those old woundings and all of those old stories. Practice is helpful. We might want to write out a script, you know, especially if this is new for us, of what we want to say. Things that could be helpful to include in that script are your why. Why are you setting this new boundary? For most of us, and again, I'm really simplifying it, Lacey, but for most of us, it's going to be some version of, because I want this relationship to either sustain into longevity, or I want this relationship to feel more fulfilling, right? All very positive. So saying your why can really go a long way to, you know, increasing the likelihood that you have a collaborative partner on the receiving end. Because otherwise, again, they might make up their own narrative about why you're doing it. So if you give them, you know, why it's important to you, which for most of us, like I said, is some version of increasing or helping the relationship, some receivers can hear that. You know, some people can acknowledge that. Also really helpful to communicate the change that's going to happen. And when we're communicating this, to focus on using I language, because a boundary is about us. It's a change we're going to make to empower ourselves to create space so that our needs can be better met. It's not an ultimatum, meaning we want to avoid using you language. Every time, Janet, you call at 3 a.m., you expect me, right? Janet is going to, whenever our ego hears you, we can become very defensive. So it could instead look like, I value our relationship, Janet, and I would like it to continue. I need my sleep at night, and being awoken results in me waking up and feeling exhausted the next day. You know, just, I'm really, really silly about that. Next time my phone rings in the evening, you know, and after hours, I will not be answering the phone. I will call back, you know, when I have resources available to me. So that was all I language. I am telling Janet, right, what she can expect differently the next time she picks up the phone at 3 a.m. to give me a call. So like I said, communicating, getting clear on the why, communicating the why at a time when neither of us are emotionally activated, and then communicating the exact change that's going to happen. That can go a long way, like I said, to getting the other person on board, though it might not. That other person still in that moment might have some of their own wounding come to the surface.
This is such a great segue, I think, into how to do the work, your book, because so much of the root of what we're even talking about in general is, it really does, like the tagline of your book, it comes from recognizing your patterns, healing from your past, and to create yourself. Tell us about that a little bit, because that's such a fantastic title, How to Do the Work.
I appreciate it. I mean, I think it really embodies the reality that change takes action. And I worked in a field for a very long time, and I became very frustrated and disempowered, quite honestly, Lacey, within myself and my own ability to make change and all of my clients. And I realized so many of us have so much insight and awareness in spades even, and this can be even the most painful place to be, and yet we can't bridge that gap into daily change. And the reality is, because 95% of the day those old programs are running, it is in our day-to-day life that we need to begin to show up consciously and make those new choices. So I think the title is really a nod to that, you know, creating change in our life does come through new daily actions. It also happens to be one of the most difficult things for that subconscious of ours that prefers the familiar, that likes us to be in those old pattern ways of being. So for me, that's what the work is. It's the daily lived experience of showing up in a new small way for ourselves. And what the book represents for me is the first start to finish place where I'm able to unpack and explore and offer this new model of holistic wellness, acknowledging the mind, the body, the soul, the imbalances in any or all of those areas that are keeping us stuck in that subconscious autopilot and stuck operating, you know, around that wounding that most of us are carrying, and learning how to, from that vantage point, create change. And so for me, I'm really excited because it really does offer not only the theory, which is incredibly helpful for the awareness side of it. The awareness is important because a lot of us are walking around entertaining really limiting narratives. I'm stuck. I can't change. I won't change. This isn't meant for me. I'm broken. I'm unworthy. I mean, they really go very deep. A lot of the narratives that we create as we witness ourselves consistently unable to make change. So awareness is incredibly important. Also in the book, and actually at the end of each chapter, I have action exercises, whether or not they're journal prompts, whether or not they're exercises of exploration of how to now harness the insight into action. The Instagram community is near and dear to me and will always be part of the work. I acknowledge, obviously, the limits of the squares and of how and what I can present in that way. So for me, I'm super excited to have the book as really the handbook of holistic wellness, and hopefully giving the tools to everyone around the world who wants to begin this journey, a pathway of how as well.
That's wonderful. When can we expect it?
Well, the book is currently on pre-sale and it will be alive in the world. The delivery date, if you will, is March 9th. So a couple months away, it's coming. I am so super excited.
No, it's fun. I've pre-ordered quite a few books and it's always fun when they just totally randomly show up and you're like, yeah, it's like a present that you forgot mm-hmm. about. Yeah, no, I love that. Let's talk about you. How are you doing? You made the move to LA finally.
I am in LA. We arrived here February 1st of last year. So just in time for LA to close down and have a very unique experience of life here, though I definitely can't complain because we did leave in the middle of winter. I got to reap the benefits of sunshine.
And did you land in Venice?
So we did. We came to Venice. We had found a place online that was waiting for us. So that was really awesome. And interestingly, funny you're bringing that up, the move for me, while it was, I have had my eye on the West Coast and the sunshine and the ability to be outside all year round for quite some time. So I say that to say I had been manifesting and really, you know, very much intentionally planning to move out here. Upon moving, the transition was difficult in many ways. I had a lot of old stuff come up. So again, the recovering codependent in me, I mean, Jesus, I have a whole country now between my family and I. You think that would be positive? That was challenging. A lot of just, you know, shifting into life here, which objectively didn't seem very different than what I was doing in Philly, though I think a lot of us are surprised by the smaller transitions and the things that comes up. So the first couple months here did bring up a lot of the pull toward those old habits. I wanted nothing to do with my morning routine for a very long time. I, you know, was engaging in just some lifestyle choices that aren't ones that I typically engaged in, probably to cope with the underlying agitation of the move. So I was actually surprised, to be honest, with how challenging this thing that I wanted so desperately to do. And part of it too, I'm sure, challenged that subconscious of worthiness. You know, now I'm living this life that I've tried so hard to achieve. And I guess part of me on some level had that idea that, you know, maybe I'm not really worthy of being here and of embodying this now new experience.
There's so many wonderful things you shared in that I think are super universal. If I remember correctly, your sun sign's a Virgo and your wife is a Cancer.
Yes. You're good.
I think those are probably like the two hardest signs to pick up and move across country.
Yeah.
You know, wanting that comfort and the routine and the safety. And so, yeah, thank you for sharing that really vulnerably, because I think so many listeners are probably able to really resonate when they've made huge life choices. And it's also, like you said, it's so intense to actually be in what you've always dreamed about. It's honestly incredibly intense. For me, it's the same exact thing. When I achieve really big things I've always wanted, and it's totally different than what I envisioned, which is crazy. It's its own other reframing practice.
Absolutely. And then a further, just compound it anymore, a lot of us, and it's funny, Lolly and I were talking about this morning, a lot of us then, you know, go into what's the next thing?
Yep.
I'm going to achieve. And her and I were having a discussion about that as that old conditioning, that, you know, achieving the next thing versus where is the differentiation between that and what I believe at least is our soul's energetic desire to expand. So the more natural, like we always kind of want to expand a little bit too, because a lot of us, I do believe, have that patterning, that conditioning of on to the next. Okay, well, this is great. Well, where's my next bigger, better thing I can do? So for, you know, the conversation I was exploring is where is that line between, like I said, I believe we all have the energetic drive toward expansion, though I know for me, I have that conditioning of, okay, check this box, where's my next home? And so how do I find the space where I can embody it without trying to push myself into what's next?
Right. Or from, you know, a place that maybe isn't so authentic. That makes total sense. What about this holiday season? What's coming up for you? Anything at all?
So emotionally, you know, I think this holiday, like most holidays, you know, for me, the past couple of years, I've been really trying to cultivate exploring what I want for holidays. So the first couple of years of doing that was when I was in no contact with my family. So they were not part of my holiday consideration, though there was a lot of guilt. There was a lot of feel bads that I had when I and Lolly would sit down and decide, well, what do we want our Christmas to look like? Or how do we want to spend our time? So a couple years into that now, thankfully, I don't necessarily feel as bad. I feel very, you know, comfortable and confident. So, you know, her and I this year, like the past few years, have centered our holiday plans around what we want to do, which will be spending the time here in Venice together. So that has relieved itself a bit. I have, on the personal side of things, I'm actually headed to Philly next week because my mom has been, within the past year, diagnosed with breast cancer and has...
Oh, man.
Yeah, so she struggles just generally with her health. This was the latest blow to that. And she's been getting chemotherapy and they finally discontinued that treatment. It was successful, though they still have to operate to remove the mass. So she has an operation date, I think, in like 2 weeks from now. So I'm going to squeak in just to see her, lay some eyes on her before she goes in for that. She is 82, I believe, now. So I'm headed back. So I have that on the horizon. Oh, that's needless to say, I've reconnected with my family over the past year. So I think that might be news. So gradually, with boundaries, I've been cultivating new relationships with all of my family members, as well as my family unit. I was back to see them a couple months ago for the first time when travel became safe, at least initially, before it became unsafe again. I was back home to see them. So that was my first time, you know, sharing space with them post reconnection, new me with new boundaries, which I was really surprised at how empowered I felt and how much I was able to show up for myself. Because I was very, there was a bit of concern of, yeah, this is all fine and good when they're not in my life and when I'm across the country, and what will it be like when I'm in the room with them, when I have that, you know, that tug to go back into that old patterning. So I was really proud and empowered. I'm also really proud of my family. In that break of time, they've done a lot of work. They've began their own healing journeys, you know, as individuals, as a family. We've done family therapy together when we began to build the bridge of reconnection. So there's obviously that little part in my mind still. Now I'm going home. My mom is actively sick. That for me, right, is very triggering, has been historically very activating. We're on the heels of yet another surgery. So a lot comes up for me there. So this will be an interesting trip home in that context as well. Though, like I said, I'm feeling really empowered and safe within myself to go and walk through, you know, whatever it is that comes of this visit.
Well, thank you for that super vulnerable share and expansion that, you know, you too are always constantly going through life and evolving and having to do the work, you know, so that's amazing. And congratulations that the chemo was successful for your mom. That's fantastic to hear. The surgery, I know, will be very intense, but gosh, what a win.
Yes, absolutely. Very grateful.
Well, I'm so excited that we got to catch up again. Is there any last thing you want to share of importance that you think, you know, people need to know going into 2021?
I think, you know, the most important thing to share is for me to just continue to share first acknowledgement, as I always like to do, you know, anyone even just taking the time to listen to you and I chatting now, you know, a second time, whether you know our work and, you know, you've tuned in often and or this is new to you. I just commend anyone who shows up to hear and receive, you know, others and their stories that might feel very similar and resonating, and that a lot of aspects might feel very dissimilar. The more we can hear and listen to other people and their stories, the more that we can learn and empower ourselves to take what resonates and what can help us gain that awareness, right, to then bridge that gap and create change. So I just like to always honor anyone out there, you know, listening to this, hearing these messages, and also to always extend, you know, a message of empowerment. The reason why I share my story so often is because in so many ways, you know, I know how it feels to come through so many cycles of disempowerment, to not really know how to show up for myself in any way. And I really truly know that it begins with things like listening to this new information and with making one new small choice. So that begins, each and every moment is a new one. You know, this year has been really difficult for many of us. And I think in any time we can remind ourselves that this moment in time right now is new and detach it from the past, and the next moment in time I live is new, that can create a situation where we can gain, you know, some headway to creating change.
I love that. It's the perfect ending note. Amen.
Amen.
Well, thank you so much. And I really wish you the best trip and the best holiday in Venice. And I know we'll connect again soon.
Absolutely. And as always, Lacey, thank you for sharing your time, energy, and community with me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is the motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, the motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.